Greetings, Grapple fans, and I'm sorry to introduce this episode with the sound of frustration in my voice, but that is because at this a few seconds ago, I found out that the recording I'd done earlier today with our guest for this episode has unfortunately not created a file that is usable in this episode. And that is such a shame on multiple levels, because it's just taken time out of everyone's day that can't be brought back. And because the guest that we had was Sakiza, who's someone I've had been, and I told her this in the recording, I was desperate to have her on this show from as long as I've been aware of her. So what I'm going to do as best I can briefly is summarize the conversation that we had that I can recall off the top of my head, the points that she was making, and then because Simon wasn't available, so we didn't have a backup record from Simon, which would have solved all this issue, I will put on the second half of the conversation that me and Simon had when Simon got back from work, because we weren't able to get our schedules to fit around a period that all three of us could come together, and that will be basically the brunt of the conversation. And in that, I do also repeat some of the points that Sakiza made. So I'm going to try as best as I can now to summarize Sakiza's key points and implore you all to seek out Sakiza herself, not just for her wrestling podcast, but for her stand-up. Because, as I said to her at the time, I first became aware of her for her appearance on James Acaster's podcast series about albums from 2016, in that she mentioned her love for pro wrestling, and just through that and the stuff I heard from her online in that podcast, I went to see her at Edinburgh in 2022, where she did a show at the Pleasance Courtyard. It was one of the very best shows I saw that year. I said to her that I feel like it should have been nominated for Best Newcomer that year at Edinburgh, which it didn't, because this was a year post-pandemic that there were essentially 3 years worth of Best Newcomer candidates turning up that year, and so I think she may have got lost in the shuffle, which is what can happen to you at Edinburgh. But I personally really loved it, and I compared it to other comedians that I've seen at Edinburgh, like Beck Hill, Sean McLaughlin, Hannibal Buress, Jordan Brooks, and a few years after seeing them in a smaller venue, I'm certain that they are going to be somewhere much larger in the future, and they're going to make a name for themselves. And all of those ones I've mentioned before have done so, and I don't doubt Sakiza's about to do that. I mean, she already was doing that. If you watched Live at the Apollo, she was on that. So seek her out on the BBC iPlayer if you can. If her episode's up, check her out there as well. And just see her live if you get the chance to. If you want to follow Sakiza on the social medias, then you can find her at... you can find her on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram as Sakiza Comedy. That's SIKISA comedy.com for a website, and for a socials, it's either Sakiza Comedy or Twix_Choc87, and she's well worth the listen. And also, most importantly, she's the head of the Wrestle Club podcasting table, and that is a podcast series you should definitely seek out. You've already heard Danny, and you will hear Ibs in the next episode, and we make allusions to the recording with Sakiza in that one as well. So, yeah, apologies yet again to Sakiza. She's a very, very busy woman. As well as being a comedian, she's been an immigration lawyer. She does loads of stuff with Pro Wrestling Eve. She's, like, all over the place. She's just a very, very impressive person, both as a performer and just in general. Like, listen to her interview with Rich Herring to get another sense of, like, the busy, crazy life she leads. And, again, just give her all of your attention that you can. Onto the wrestling front, Sakiza mentioned that the first thing she ever saw in wrestling was the Big Boss Man versus The Undertaker Hell in a Cell match at WrestleMania 15, which she knows is one of the worst matches, cell matches at least, of all time. But whatever it was, it hooked her in. And she then saw the Royal Rumble in 2000 when that was on Channel 4. And after that, it's just been a constant in her life. And she packs in... she watches way more wrestling than either me or Simon do. She was saying that at one point before things got even more crazy for her. She was watching wrestling 5 days a week. When I heard her on the James Acaster podcast, she was talking about like TNA wrestling. And like, you're talking about TNA in like 2019, 2020, or Impact Wrestling, I guess it was called then. That's a sign of someone who's a dedicated follower of wrestling. And she goes to the live stuff. That's where she met a lot of her Wrestle Club co-host, well, not co-host, minions, as she likes to put it, at the end of our recording. And so, yeah, that's what got her in her love into wrestling. And then that one of the reasons that she wanted to choose the match that we do cover in this episode, which is the WrestleMania 35 main event between Charlotte Flair, Ronda Rousey, and Becky Lynch for both the Raw and SmackDown titles, was its historical significance. And she was saying at the time when she started watching wrestling around 2000, one of the pivotal figures for her was Lita. And I think, as we've been talking about in previous episodes, and Sakisa kind of confirmed it for us, that Lita is probably low-key one of the most important figures in wrestling in the modern era, in that she was the one that, maybe for the first time, female wrestling fans could find an attachment. And I think you can definitely plot a through line, at least with Lita to Becky Lynch, but obviously Lita's also been an inspiration for AJ Lee, and I'm guessing Ronda Rousey was at least a fan to some extent, and Charlotte Flair maybe at least became an admirer as time goes on. And the other key agreement that we really came to in the recording was that the match itself is kind of underwhelming. It's not as great a match as it could have been, and Sakisa pointed that out before I got, and I'd had the same thought, that it really is the presence of Charlotte Flair that makes it not quite work, because the narrative throughout it all, really from the build-up, was obviously from WrestleMania 34, Ronda Rousey was probably going to main event at WrestleMania. That's what they brought her in for, and probably paid her a lot more money than they'd ever paid any female performer before. And Sakisa clearly never really clicked with Ronda as a character or as an in-ring performer. She never really bought the scowl face that she put on when she got to the ring. She didn't enjoy her promos, so she never and she didn't have like the connections with Ronda Rousey from MMA, which I personally did because I was watching a fair amount of UFC and MMA around that time, and I do remember watching the Miesha Tate Ronda Rousey match and really being impressed by it. It was one of the most exciting matches I saw in WWE wrestling, in pro wrestling, or in MMA that year. And you could see the stardom in Ronda Rousey and why she was like a step up from Gina Carano's presence that had happened a few years earlier, that had first started to bring women under the radar a bit more in the MMA world. But I think the key problem with the match, and I think we do talk about this with Simon as well, myself and Simon, is that I don't think they had necessarily faith in them. I don't think that all of them combined had that much in-ring experience. As far as like WrestleMania main eventers, I would wonder if like if you had total matches that the people involved had going into the main event, even with it being three people taking part in the match, that it wasn't. It was maybe the most inexperienced main event, and we talk about that a bit more into the Simon part of the conversation. So I'll leave that on. Also, I just don't think the triple threat format works. But most of all, this was the last year of a one-night-only WrestleMania event, and it had enough stuff to cover two nights of WrestleMania. The whole show from start to finish, if you count the kickoff, is 7 hours long. And one of the things Sakisa loves doing is watching the wrestling live, like going to a pub or wherever it is, very often with some of her Wrestle Club friends, or watching it live at home and taking it as it's happening. But with this one, she was like, as she said, basically, the thing she was most looking forward to going into WrestleMania 35 was the Kofi Mania storyline, because she herself is a black woman, and she was enjoying the Kofi storyline so much, and I think Kofi meant so much to her as a wrestler as well. And that was really what drew her in. And if you look at the card, and we'll talk about it a bit more, it just kept going, because this was at the time when they were obsessed with minutes on the WWE network that they can cite in their annual financial reviews and everything, really building up the brand. And all the pay-per-views at this time were like 4 hours long and all sorts of craziness. But yeah, that was kind of where she stood on it, that she's not really a big fan of the match, but she was happy that the moment happened. And then we got into a conversation of like where wrestling for women has gone on since then, and she talks about this a lot in Wrestle Club, so you should really listen to that. In one of the recent episodes, they were talking about the problem with the AEW women's division, and she thinks what they need to do is actually have some sort of... they have some focus, and on the WWE side of things, that they're they believe that there's a sense of like there being a top six stars, of which are Becky, Ronda, well, not Ronda anymore, but Becky, Charlotte, Rhea Ripley, and so on. And there's just a mass of the mid-card, which I guess in many ways looks more like the WrestleMania 25 Battle Royal, insofar as they're kind of hard to distinguish one between the other, that no one's given enough to separate them and give them storylines. And so that's why they think there should be a secondary women's title in the mid-card for them to feel Liv Morgan's and your Raquel Rodriguez's and your Chelsea Green's to have something to work towards. Now, I personally, I'm kind of championship belted out on a personal level, and my argument to that is what I think they need to do is not necessarily focus on belts, but just actually give storylines that don't need belts to progress them, that we can have matches at WrestleMania like for women that are like the LA Knight AJ Styles match, where there's no titles on the line, it's just two very over upper mid-card personalities, and a match between them is interesting enough to make it seem WrestleMania worthy. And we were talking about it that they teased it at the Royal Rumble. You could very easily have three major women's singles matches on this two-night WrestleMania card in the Io Sky Bayley match that Sakisa is very frustrated at. She was saying, look at the way that Cody Rhodes has been presented as the winner of his Royal Rumble compared to how Bayley's been presented since then as the winner of her Royal Rumble. Very, very, very good case. And she basically said that like they should have spent this time building up Io Sky and Bayley, that it would have been WrestleMania Night 1 main event worthy. And it wasn't. It hasn't. And because of The Rock's involvement, that's where we've probably gone down to. But she is right. Like, even if The Rock was still going to do just Night 1, it would have very much been no sense that this was now a Night Ender worthy. Whereas we have had, since WrestleMania 35, we've had matches that have either main evented Night 1 in the Bianca Belair-Sasha Banks match, or at WrestleMania 39 in Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair, in hindsight, probably should have main evented Night 1. I've said this before, and I said it to Sakisa again, I think that both of those matches, Belair-Sasha Banks and Rhea Ripley-Charlotte Flair, were legitimately the best matches on those WrestleManias, 37 and 39. They were my favourite matches of those ones. And so if 35 is a sign that they didn't yet know what a main event involving women should be, or they didn't have the wrestlers that were at that level of ability yet, they've all got there. Lynch with her matches with Bianca Belair and Trish Stratus have shown that she can be a main event singles wrestler that can have a 20-minute match. And maybe still at WrestleMania 35 time, they didn't have that faith in her. But fundamentally, that's not what they should have done with this match anyway. And again, we were saying, like, Charlotte Flair just sticks out as a sore thumb. That Saki was saying this, like, they told that story. They told the story with Bayley. They told the story. They'd had the matches with Ronda Rousey against Alexa Bliss, against Bayley, against Sasha Banks at the Royal Rumble, which I, to this day, think is Ronda Rousey's best actual wrestling match. And also with Charlotte Flair at Survivor Series. And we were also saying, like, the moment that it was just that Becky Lynch's two key moments were first the turn on Charlotte Flair that the bookers thought was a heel turn, but everyone else in the crowd very much didn't see that. And it was really a repeat of the Daniel Bryan story again 5 years on, of the fans being in struggle with the bookers until they finally had to concede that the main event they wanted to book back at WrestleMania 30 would have been Randy Orton against Batista, instead becomes Randy Orton and Batista and Daniel Bryan in a triple threat. Similarly, you could kind of tell from Ronda Rousey's presentation at WrestleMania 34 and Charlotte Flair being the one to break the streak of Asuka in one of the big undercard matches as well at WrestleMania 34, that I said I think they've got penciled in that day that WrestleMania 35 was going to be headlined by Charlotte Flair versus Ronda Rousey, and it was Becky Lynch and the following that she'd amassed kind of through social media, it seemed, more than anything. And then just that moment of liberation, you could see it in her. The liberation of the slap against Charlotte Flair that then the crowd just goes nuts for, and they have to battle with the fans, like, say, she does her whole, oh, I don't know you an explanation, but come Evolution time, even though they're kind of booked that match to look like the Last Woman Standing that should have been the blow-off to the Charlotte-Becky feud. They were still kind of presenting Becky as the underhanded heel, running away at one point in fear from the, you know, we have a whole Meltzer five-star, alternate five-star recording about that that you can look for in the archives. But that story with Charlotte was done, and it did seem like that was where they were going, and then you had the Survivor Series build-up, and that iconic moment, that was the moment that Becky needed, her face covered in blood, and her spoiling for a fight still. And the funny coincidence of that then leading to her not being able to wrestle the singles match she would have had with Ronda Rousey at Survivor Series, and we've never got and probably never will get now. That is crazy that out of all the people that Ronda Rousey has wrestled, out of all the people that Becky Lynch has wrestled, and the sense that their feud was what the fans wanted to see at the WrestleMania main event, we never got it. Instead, we got the blown finish, and yeah, we kind of, again, most of this stuff we cover again with Simon, so I'm just trying to make sure I don't forget any specific points that Sakiza makes. Otherwise, the original plan was just to take the conversation I had with Simon afterwards and kind of condense that so that we didn't repeat ourselves, but because I don't have the original conversation with Sakiza, those repetitions actually come in handy with me getting something close to a completed episode for this one. So, yeah, I think I've done the best I can to cover all of Sakiza's points about the match itself. She liked it enough. The show was too long, and that's probably one of the reasons why the crowd was pretty dead outside of some big spots. But it's not the match that's important. It's the fact that the match happened, really, that made it important. So, yeah, we're going to go into the Simon Cross chunk of that conversation in a second, but I just want to also remember that when we asked Sakiza for her dream WrestleMania match, she really took a truly idealized world situation, because I was saying you could have people that weren't injured, but you can't have time travel. So what Sakiza's dream WrestleMania match would be is actually one for this WrestleMania 40, which would have been her follow-up to the match that we'll be going to be talking about in the next episode with Ibs, another member of the Wrestle Club podcast, where she would have had Dominic having faced off against his dad at WrestleMania 39, at WrestleMania 40 would have been Dominic against Eddie Guerrero. That's the dream match, and you know, that's a world I really wish existed, that we could have seen Dominic Mysterio against Uncle Eddie. Depends on whether those blood tests were correct or not, I suppose, in the paternity suit. But yeah, that was my best summary that I could think of this record. Again, I'm so sorry to Sakiza that we lost it in the shuffle, and because Simon always has a backup record, Simon wasn't there to do it. I didn't ask Sakiza to make a backup record. This is like the worst case scenario. Genuinely the worst case scenario, because out of everyone, this was the one that I thought it was pivotal, that we had a different voice and a different perspective in Sakiza as a woman wrestling fan to have given her point of view. But she has expressed interest in being on a show in the future. And even if we don't get her on again, because, you know, this isn't going to fill her with confidence of our professionalism, I implore you to seek her out. Sikisa, Sakiza, you'll find her all over the place. And the Wrestle Club podcast is definitely well worth your time looking up as well. Wrestle Club UK podcast, if you're searching it on Apple or Spotify. So, yeah, that is a summary of what happened as best as we could. Sorry, I've kind of stepped over myself. I just need to get this out. And the tight deadlines we're working to, and there's no way of recovering the project, it doesn't seem like. Unless someone who knows how EVAR works can get in touch with me and say, because I can see the file as like a length of time as 53 minutes, which was the time that we went from call start to call end. The conversation about the match itself was probably about 45 minutes. And so, like I said, there's like a 20-minute summary of best as I could remember off the top of my head. And after that, was really nothing else left to say again, except I'm so sorry that this is the best way that I can present what we were talking about and Sakiza's love for what this achieved. Because I was saying, like, do you think that the gender parity can happen? And she's like, it probably can happen, but it's a long way from happening. And it's something that you just need to continue to vocalize. We need to be vocal about the issues we have with AEW's booking of women. We need to vocalize when WWE makes those mistakes like they did post-Women's Revolution in giving, like, James Ellsworth the Money in the Bank briefcase, or you know, the treatment they gave towards Naomi, and she was saying like her hope for Naomi when she came back has kind of already been quashed in how she's been presented since her Royal Rumble comeback. But it's a better place than it was before. But you got there by fighting and resisting, and that's where the fans did with getting Becky Lynch in this main event. So when I asked if it's the struggle, will there always be a struggle? Sakiza disputed the term struggle, but it's always going to be a work in progress, I suppose. And that's as best as we can hope for. And my ability to keep podcasts in an audio shape that is usable is also a work in progress. So apologies again. And now we're going to say, as I said at the time, a hot tag. Though I guess it's not, well, you know what I mean. But we're tagging out of my summary of the Skeezer portion, and now I will take you to the second half, which is the Simon Cross conversation. So that is the transition to a less frustrated and annoyed at himself Lorcan from a few hours earlier. So that's where we're going right now. And seamlessly, suddenly, in the ring along with me, in the audio ring along with me, is the Billy Kay to my Peyton Royce.
Mr. Simon Cross.
So, Simon, now let the men explain exactly what is right and wrong. No, I think Sakiza covered pretty much all the key points in it. You know, as you were saying, the crowd was low, but this was also at the peak of WWE. Like we were saying, this was a 7-hour show. This was hour seven.
Yeah, I wanted to give a little bit of my personal experience about the one night thing and how my relief came when we did go to two nights through circumstances outside of my control. So as long-time listeners of the show know, I have attended WrestleMania Live, WrestleMania 32, which had a two-hour pre-show, which I missed the majority of because of a ticketing issue. The Wi-Fi went down at the AT&T Stadium.
Think about that.
Nice one. Very end of the Ryback versus Kalisto tables match. So, blessing in disguise.
Really. Yeah, I was about to say.
If I'd have been there from the start, I'd have had a two-hour pre-show. And it gets to the point where by the time The Rock hits the ring, everyone will have been in their seat for 5 hours. You know, when he's like doing his thing with the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders and the flamethrower.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there was at least two matches after that. I've not checked the exact running order. I really remember this match being, at the time I saw it, because I saw it live, I remember being absolutely exhausted and feeling, okay, it's clearly me. I'm tired. This is better than it was. I'm judging this harshly. I should have trusted my gut on second viewing because it's actually quite, for personally, I find it a little bit gutting for these guys.
Yeah,
that it was this underwhelming.
I think it was a combination of things, but I think mostly it was the fact that maybe, I think after this match, both Charlotte and Becky became better wrestlers, and also the notion of what you put into a 20-minute women's main event match is more established. I was looking at it and you know, Charlotte's had great matches, Becky's had great matches since then, main events of pay-per-views, WrestleManias, SummerSlams, not main events of WrestleManias and SummerSlams, but you know what I mean, big matches that have gone that length because I think that they were getting that experience. But as we say, this is a match between people with maybe a combined in-ring knowledge of like 15 years between them. A year for Ronda. No more than 7 for Becky and Charlotte. Charlotte and Ronda very much in the WWE system as well. Becky slightly separate from that. But then she took a big lull in between of non-activity and then went in and essentially retrained on the WWE's umbrella. So this is another one. Is this the first WrestleMania with mostly an NXT-esque trained group of wrestlers in the main event? Obviously, there's been some Roman Reigns ones and Seth Rollins ones. And Brock Lesnar, but Brock Lesnar was OVW.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm thinking this is the first kind of NXT main event, if you don't count Ronda Rousey as well.
Yeah. Well, majority. And let's face it, Ronda's in-ring training that she would have had under the WWE system would have been from NXT. No, it would have been at the Performance Center.
And also, it's just the issue with the triple threat match. It was clear at some moments when there were those fleeting moments, and they were fleeting moments where it was Ronda against Lynch, that was when the crowd seemed to start to be getting involved because the Lynch-Charlotte story had been told, the Charlotte-Ronda story had been told, but the Lynch-Ronda hadn't been told and still hasn't been told and will probably never be told. which is the big crushing disappointment coming out of this. That, like, see, I would have booked it as a three-way elimination if they were insistent upon having Charlotte in it. And that would have been then the table spot can be them dragging her out and then both of them pin her. And that then leads them to having 5 minutes or however long you want to go just to themselves, not just rushing through a sequence and have it be short enough that Charlotte doesn't have to lie around doing nothing for 5 minutes until Becky gets her win. That's the basic problem. In general, I don't really like triple threat matches anyway. I don't like multi-person matches. I also think that the four-way match is a better way of doing it than the triple threat match because you can pair off at that point as well. And you can fit it, you know, like one of the best finishes to any match actually is that four-way backlash match after WrestleMania 23, I think. Cena, Orton, Edge, and Shawn Michaels. Yeah. It ends with Shawn Michaels, like, super kicking Cena into pinning Randy Orton or something along those lines. But the triple threat is just always, it's that problem with the odd number. And even when Paul Heyman kind of popularized it, he seemed to know it himself in ECW because they always formatted it as a 2-4 structure. And the WWE knew that when they did it at WrestleMania 2000, they made that be an elimination format.
I think it's two things. I think the elimination triple and four-way match, Vince would have had it's wrestling, like old school. It's not modern.
Can't go old school with multi-people matches. They didn't exist, really, until modern wrestling.
I know, but for him, he'd have thought that. And I don't see him having Charlotte pinned in this match, even in a triple threat.
And as I've said, I think maybe they think they're replicating the Daniel Bryan story. They can argue in their head that they're putting Becky over so much that they've made her the unified champion. And that would have meant something if she'd have then had a reign like Roman Reigns, but like she dropped one of the belts to Charlotte like a month later, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It was in a separate island. They didn't need to do that.
But I do think it's just one of those things that, like, 20 years from now, all people need to remember is that Becky Lynch, through her own abilities and connection with the audience, was able to triumph as the first woman in a WrestleMania main event and the last one-night WrestleMania as well. And like I said, like, all you really need to know from Hogan Andre is that stare down, and you can just replay that every WrestleMania for the montages at the start, and they just have that moment of Becky Lynch with her Kill Bill inspired gear holding up two belts and being Becky Two Belts, and that's all people need to remember, really.
I'd say the more iconic moment, which will be put in the montages, is her covered in blood on the SmackDown.
That's the definitive Becky Lynch image. And we talked about that with Sakiza, but that's not WrestleMania. That's my point, the WrestleMania. But yeah, and also one thing that we didn't bring up as well, obviously I'm thinking from the Irish side of things, why I was so excited for Becky. And whilst Ronda Rousey's obviously her impact in MMA, but I do wonder, did the fact that Amau, the Irish fighter, who just will fight anyone and say whatever they like, was that a part of what was in the pop culture at the time that made Becky Lynch also appeal beyond the mass, or, you know, beyond the main audience?
And we are in the MetLife Stadium, so a lot of Irish around New York, of course.
Yeah, but at this point, WrestleMania, it's like, I wonder what proportion of that crowd is local anymore. I think really, from WrestleMania 23 onwards, I think it's been like this international draw. But there would have been as many Irish people there, almost. Irish people, as well as Americans claiming they're Irish. And the ripple effects after it are that women now have the confidence to be put in those main events. Yeah. And more of these people have the experience of having these times matches. And the people who maybe still didn't have the faith in them are increasingly out of that spotlight, out of that level of control. I mean, it's funny, obviously we've got both Becky Lynch's recent autobiography that I haven't read yet, but also Ronda Rousey's. So that it's a shame, really, that that wasn't a month or two earlier, and we could have put those two perspectives into this as well.
Ronda's promoting that hard online and going after people.
Maybe that should have been my dream WrestleMania match, just this match without Charlotte. But also, I don't want to go into that much because I do think Charlotte, like so many women in any arena, gets more hate than she has due. I do think, especially at this point, she was the best in-ring wrestler out of the four horsewomen. I don't think she had the presentation abilities of Sasha Banks. I don't think she had the automatic crowd connection that Bayley had. And I don't think she had the charisma and maybe crossover appeal that Becky Lynch had. But fundamentals in that ring, if you were to say which one of them is the best wrestler, and I think that match with Rhea Ripley as well, I think one of the things she does really well, and that is a problem with not just women wrestlers, but a lot of women wrestlers, especially at this time still in how they were trained, is that very often there doesn't seem to be a lot of force behind their blows. I mean, as much as I love watching Becky Lynch's heel slash face turn at SummerSlam after she slaps Charlotte across the face, those follow-up punches that she's doing are quite embarrassing to look at, in all honesty. Charlotte Flair, when she hits stuff, like in this match, when she does some stuff, it looks like she's going for... There's force in those boots when she hits them. And the gymnastics background that obviously, again, seems to be like the great fundamental for a woman's wrestler to have, it seems, going forward, is some sort of background in gymnastics is going to get you a long way. And that followed up later on with the Rhea Ripley match. And Ronda Rousey, that was one thing that she did say during the Rhea Ripley match. She essentially put, as she said, her big dick energy and had the match run as long as she wanted it to, because that was going to be the best match that they were going to have. And they did have the best match on that card, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, she's got that confidence in her. She's got that. I don't want to say she's relied on it, but it doesn't hurt to have the Flair name, does it? She hasn't relied on it, and her work speaks for herself in the ring. It might be a little harder to go, oh, well, we're not going to let a athletic Flair.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because we had David Flair, and he wasn't anywhere near any of this stuff. Yeah. Who knows what we could have had with Reed Flair? We'll never know, unfortunately. But what was great about that was she incorporated elements of Ric Flair's stuff, but made it her own. The figure four being turned into the figure eight. Her doing that corner bump, but usually making it her own. And she didn't. The wise thing she did is she didn't inherit the Flair flop or the Flair flip, you know, like being press slammed off the top rope or anything. She gave her own, and she can do those high flying moves that Ric Flair could never do with the moonsault and the Spanish fly and everything. So it's not like she's taken the best elements, and also because it's them repackaged into because she doesn't have to be the like for like with Ric Flair, like Dominic obviously at some point felt like, we'll talk about this more in the next episode, that Dominic felt like he had to try and fit the like for like with Rey, and that's where he's come short. There's always going to be that little bit of a separation because she's not in the same role going for the same lineage of belts. She's in her own niche, and she did something her dad never did. She main evented WrestleMania. Whether she should have or not, at least at this time, I don't think so. I do think her story was told, and it was just, again, I think you can argue that in their own heads, as like, oh, the odds are against Becky, and everyone thinks that Charlotte's the preferred person. And it is weird, again, like, Charlotte gets the helicopter thing, Ronda gets the live band, and Becky just gets her, but she gets to come out last, which the challenger never usually does, and she comes out the winner. So it's one of those things where I guess, I don't know. I also think, and they has had, I don't like triple threat matches usually, but the triple threat match they had 2 years before was seen by many people as the best match on that WrestleMania. So they thought, let's go into that storyline lineage as well. And again, but part of me just thinks that's their suspicion that two women going at 15, 20 minutes, we don't yet know yet. So if we can do them in a booked, we've got these high spots that we scatter around the match, and those were the ones that got the reaction from the crowd, but everything else, it was just, it wasn't Triple H main event level, but it was getting there at points.
Right. Two things. I think the entrances, I think the fact that Becky didn't get a special one works in her character's favour.
She doesn't have the budget going into it.
Well, no, it's not even necessarily that. With Charlotte, it was all about the pageantry, the hand-picked favourite of Vince McMahon, or Mr. Blurry Face, if you follow WWE 2K14.
And it was a reference to a famous Ric Flair entrance when he was going into a match against Ricky Morton in like a baseball stadium or something along those lines.
Obviously, Ronda came in with a big splash. It's like, I have crossover appeal. I have proved myself in another world. So, yeah, she, fine. She gets the life ban. But Becky coming out without that, it's just like, no, I'm just me. And that's all I need to be. I don't need your title of like being handpicked. I don't need your title of being like, you know, Mrs. like crossover appeal. I am me. That's enough. you're both going down.
And they did truly invest in it. Like, she went the rest of the year, other than dropping that belt to Charlotte, she was borderline invulnerable. They even had to make a somewhat of a subtle heel in the Natalia match at SummerSlam because they were just running out of challenges for her. And they even had her win the WrestleMania 36 match against Shayna Baszler and then vacate the title because she went off to become the mother, as she put it. Yeah. And Jim Cornette tried to bring us back to the politics of 50 years ago. But, you know, the weird thing with Becky is I don't think she's swung around her the man energy as much since then. It's like, it's just like you can always put Becky in the main event and it will be believable. But she put over Bianca Belair like numerous times. She's done the stuff with Nia Jax. She's done, you know, she's never been afraid to lose.
She's been in NXT, had a little run there as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah, and she's not saying she's downgraded herself or downvalued herself, but she's been like that team player. Whereas most other people that are essentially being set, like at that point, the biggest star in wrestling at that moment is Becky Lynch. I mean, they still have to make her share the WWE 2K front with Roman Reigns at that point, but if she'd been a man and that had been her main event, they would have then continued on to book her as the top star. Even if she had to go out for a year for a different reason, they wouldn't have had her just putting Bianca Belair over numerous times and turning heel when no one was asking for that. But we've gone over that numerous times. So it's like, she's still a main eventer, but she's not the A1, she's not in that role that it seemed like she was about to, and maybe for that year she was in, like John Cena had been, like Hulk Hogan had been, that she was as that prominent, or she could have been.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all shared around a bit more now as well anyway. And she wasn't able to carry over both brands, which maybe they could have done too. So it's been a down step, but I don't think it's maybe anything she's necessarily bitter about. And she is so over that she could main event WrestleMania this year against Rhea Ripley if suddenly everyone came down with lupus in the men's roster. You know, they can main event Becky Lynch versus Rhea Ripley is WrestleMania Night 2 main event worthy at this point, but it won't be for this WrestleMania.
No, for, you know, various reasons.
Yeah.
I think basically she's in like a perma overstate.
Yeah.
To quote some awful language from years ago, she's oven ready. Logan just shuddered. No, but in that same mold as Randy Orton, as AJ Styles, anytime you need someone to be somewhere, they can be there.
I would say she's above AJ Styles, but yeah, I do agree with you that Randy Orton, and also that is the fascinating thing as well, that she had the kid and then she came back and she's come back like no sign of anything like that, and she's like physically able to go at every, you know, those steps, and she's not the first person that did it, but she was definitely the first woman that I can think of that was like a main event or a star in the promotion at that point, went off, had a child and came back pretty much as soon as she could and has been able to continue on after that. As
I think the COVID timing was good there as well.
Well, I wonder if that was like they were at that moment and they thought, if there's ever a time to do it, this is the time to do it. And that, again, she might address that in her book and everything. But again, like, when you look back again at like Jim Cornette saying, oh, why would you leave at this point? And it's like, well, you know what's the key thing that we need to allow women to have here, Jim? Choice.
Well, the Supreme Court seems
but this is the choice to do it if you want to, you know, if you want to do it. Well, that's my point. She chose to do it, and she didn't have to be scared of her being just lost in the shuffle when she came back, or just feeling like she now has to be the mother at home, which I think others did. And she's not the first one to do it, but I don't think she's the first one to do it in the WWE. Like, there's rumours that Bianca Belair might be looking to do that. Carmella did it, obviously. She's had her own issues with that. And as I've said before, and I'll say it again in the future when we do more stuff about her, I mean, if we do it for March Mania next year, if we can talk about the Mickey James Trish Stratus match or in another environment, I think Mickey James is another figure like Lita and other people. Gail Kim, I think, is another significant figure that needs to get her flowers. Is she in the Hall of Fame yet, Mickey James?
No.
She will be very soon, and she will really hurt it. And
is she in TNA?
She might be. She might. But Gail Kim definitely is. But you know what I'm coming from. She was the first one that I can remember having a kid and saying, my wrestling career isn't over. It meant her having to do it in TNA for a while or whatever, but she still kept going.
Arguably the better artistic choice at that time, though.
we have got an episode in the past of Match of the Week about Gail Kim versus Awesome Kong, and really the knockouts, you can argue, were the precursor to this match in so many ways.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what AEW needs to continue being. Obviously, they make the signings with Monet, and they've given her the money, and that's great. That is fantastic. But it needs to be a case that they invest not just in paying her, but also putting her in these positions. So that means elevating your entire division so that she has people that it's worthy to look to, so that she can put someone over in the same way that Becky Lynch put over Bianca Belair, and it hasn't harmed her. It's raised up the entire roster, and now there are multiple women that can main event WrestleMania. It's not just Becky and the other two, you know, Ronda and Charlotte.
My hope with that is one begets the other, because yeah, she's been paid so much. You've got to put the work in to get your value. Who's yeah, been given a lot of money by his dad to do this? So
yes,
the value of the dollar's a little flood.
But basically, that means it needs to be in a situation where in a year or two's time, when Rhea Ripley's contract comes up, she can negotiate an even better deal, because going to AEW is a viable option. So Mercedes' success needs to be such that maybe one day we do see the Four Horsewomen tag, which is crazy that they've never done that, but maybe we get those Four Horsewomen tagging up, but it's not Becky Lynch, Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Charlotte Flair. It's Mercedes, Monet, Becky Quinn. I can't remember what Bayley's real name is, Rigo, before wrestling.
Martinez.
Was. Martinez, yeah. And and Charlotte Flair? I don't know how that works.
Ashley, wouldn't it?
Ashley Flair. Ashley. Maybe that'd be what it is instead. And it be because there are places to go. It's still a work in progress. But I do think we will get there. And whatever you say about the quality of this match, like I said, doesn't really matter that Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, if you just put it in like a Perspex box with no crowd reaction or anything, and you're like, they're barely moving. That doesn't matter. That's not what it was about. The quality of this match wasn't really important. It's just that they got to that moment that the bell's ringing on the final match of the card, and it's three women. And they didn't shit the bed or anything like that. It's a perfectly fine match. I'd watch it over most of the Triple H WrestleMania main events, as I've said before. But it's like, and just one last thing about the finish. You see, part of me wants, I guess we'll get the word in the books, I suppose, but part, and the fact that the camera was there ready for Ronda's reaction, and the fact that they brought it up in the commentary and the action replays, and knowing that Ronda Rousey, backstage at least, was a Paul Heyman girl, to me, this smacks of Paul Heyman whispering in people's ears and getting a finish that suits other parties, but is not necessarily the right finish for the match itself.
See, I thought it was a...
Or Vince, door, it could be Vince.
The door's open for the singles now, because you didn't... Yeah. That, from a creative perspective, but we never got it.
We've known now, never say never. And whilst Ronda Rousey is venting right now, it does seem to be targeted more at John Laurinaitis, Bruce Pritchard, and Vince McMahon than anyone else. So maybe, like with CM Punk, it's going to be that. Mm. But also, I do wonder, like, it's clear that Ronda Rousey, again, you don't want to be the guy who's emotional.
It's for the book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's like...
It's not real. I'm saying the timing.
But I do think Ronda Rousey was genuinely kind of upset that the crowd didn't embrace her. I think she's someone that wants to be liked. And that's fine. We all want to be liked. And when she didn't get the response she wanted and instead it went to Becky Lynch, I think maybe there is the sense that she took it personally. And that maybe Charlotte Flair took it personally as well, and that's what led to their kind of... But again, it's like, you don't want to, again, like say, attribute things to like women's emotions that men don't have. Because this... Becky and Charlotte's issues, whatever they've had backstage or whatever, is no different to Shawn and Brett's. So let's not suddenly say it's all soap opera bitchy catfights or whatever. Yeah. It's just two employees that have issues with each other. It looks, at least in the Charlotte Becky situation, it's been resolved. Brett's has been resolved. So maybe one day Ronda and Becky will be resolved as well.
When there is a de facto league table and you have a lot of people who... You have to have a competitive... and egotistical edge to get to the level you have in professional wrestling, where you are main eventing WrestleMania. Yeah, some of you are going to butt heads. That's just natural. That's life.
But it needs to not just be dismissed as women being women or something.
Yeah, and it also it's athletes being athletes.
Exactly. And it was that drive and determination in Ronda Rousey that got to where she was, that then got women in sports to the position that they were, that, like, as much as we love Becky and everything, if there wasn't Ronda Rousey there, the rise of Becky that year wouldn't have necessarily led to a WrestleMania main event.
Yeah.
They obviously wanted to.
Were needed.
Yeah. Well, it's just an ongoing battle. It will continue to be a battle. Takeshi didn't want to say a struggle, and I understand that, but it's just, if it's ever going to go away and not be a problem anymore, and just women are treated with utter equality across the board, we're still a long, long way from it happening. But that means we need to be willing to point it out and not just be said, oh, you're being too sensitive. No, these things have existed since the dawn of civilization, because usually that's called the dawn of man. Mm. So, you know, let's not.
I did some unconscious bias training today, so yeah, that's all fresh in my head, to be brutally honest. But there we are.
But again, like, we shouldn't really be taking up nearly as much time with this as I have with Sakiza. So we're gonna wrap it up. You usually start the show with it. But do you want to give people a little bit of a nostalgic glow of all those 5 years ago of where we were?
Well, actually, it made me feel really, really old with this. I'm going to start where I usually do, with the UK number one. And that was Someone You Loved by Lewis Capaldi. Like, I didn't realise it was that long ago.
Huh.
What is time? What is it? The US number one was Seven Rings by Ariana Grande. Might have heard it, couldn't honestly tell you if I have either way. It's a box office two belts situation for the US and the UK, and it's the film Shazam, a film I've not seen.
But it's good. It's a shame what happened to the sequel. But I actually, that year when it came out, I rated it higher than Avengers Endgame, which came out a few weeks later.
I feel we've had an offline conversation about that, actually.
Because it was actually, it wasn't trying to just be a superhero film. I think one of the reasons I liked it was it reminded me so much of the 80s blockbuster films like Ghostbusters and Gremlins, in that it had that sci-fi big concept Hollywood blockbuster thing behind it, but it also had a bit of shockingly adult scary menace to it, but undermined it completely as well with humour and kids behaving somewhat like kids in the film as well. I honestly think it's probably, yeah, I would say the best film of the DCEU, because I would say it's slightly better than Wonder Woman. I didn't rate The Suicide Squad. Obviously, anything Zack Snyder related is going to have it's going to have its strengths, but it's going to have its major, major flaws. Mm. And Aquaman was just ridiculous.
Wow. Yeah.
Gloriously ridiculous, but ridiculous. So, yeah, I hope that Shazam doesn't lose. And also, just Avengers Endgame. Yeah, it's kind of like what it was the portal scene. We got there, but God, we didn't have to sit through 3 hours of so-so time travel stuff to get to it. But it didn't matter. That's not what mattered. What it was everything that had led to that moment over literally 11 years of movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess that's another good example of it. Did you also know, I think this was the week before, because I was looking at it myself, the number ones in the UK and the US were going to be dominated for literally months with a song that's 1 minute 56 seconds long and involves a man who looks a lot like AJ Styles providing the chorus to it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to tell people what it is, if they didn't know already?
It's Old Town Road by Lil Nas X.
With Billy Ray Cyrus himself in accompaniment. I wonder if that's why Beyonce's gone country.
Anyway, I'm going to quickly blast through the card because I've just looked at it and Christ, the reason this crowd was dead.
Put aside 5 minutes.
yeah. So pre-show match, one of four. Tony Nese pinning Buddy Murphy to win the Cruiserweight Championship. Carmella wins a 17-woman WrestleMania Women's Battle Royal. I think this is the Moolah scandal one that got renamed.
Yeah. It must have been. Yeah. But it's like back in the... Again, like, look at where we've gone from WrestleMania 25 with the Miss WrestleMania. Like, back in the... At this point, that would have been the only woman's match. Mm. But instead, it's like the WrestleMania Let's Get Everyone on the Card match instead.
Yeah, let's get everyone paid.
And giving them their equivalent of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. But unfortunately...
I'd forgotten about this. Kurt Hawkins and Zack Ryder pin the revival for the Raw Tag Team Championship.
Wasn't this like show. Kurt Hawkins' first win in like 150? Yeah. These ranking systems are a sham, Simon. A sham, I tell you.
I know. Then Braun Strowman wins the Andre the Giant Bat Memorial on the pre-show. The main card opens with Seth Rollins beating Lesnar. Then you've got the Battle of the Oven Readies as AJ Styles beats Randy Orton.
The thing that was famous for this match was they kept the lights on at the entrance ramp or something. So, like, a large swathe of the crowd literally couldn't see most of the match whilst it was happening.
Yeah. Then you've got the Usos winning a Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match, defeating Aleister Black and Ricochet, which was a nice little tag team at the time. Their NXT work at the time was better, though. Rusev and Shinsuke Nakamura, what a team. And The Bar, Cesaro and Sheamus, good quality in this match.
I was thinking, I do wonder about the multi-tag team. That seems to now be becoming a regular feature. Kind of like it's taking the place of the Money in the Bank as the big action spectacle stunt fest. It's funny as well, what we also got to take into account is this is the last WrestleMania before AEW is a regular weekly counterpart. And so also this is coming towards the end of the NXT control of the Smart fan base as well, I suppose, as well. And
yeah.
Like Ricochet and Aleister Black, I think, have wrestled for the NXT tag titles like the night before or something.
Correct, yeah.
So, yeah.
I think it gets War Raiders and another team, but that's by the by. After this, Shane McMahon beats The Miz by pinfall.
It's one of those ones, again, like, how far did Shane manage to screw up the love that he had when he made his comeback? To the point that he's now the person that's being booed against The Miz. That's
how... Well, he did turn heel on The Miz.
But they knew that the crowd was willing to boo Shane now. And not only are they willing to boo Shane, they're willing to cheer The Miz in favour of Shane. That's my point.
Fair enough.
Then like, it was easy to make anyone over if they were wrestling against The Miz. Like, that was as over as Alex Ryder ever was. That was so, you know, I've always said, like,
Alex
that's...
Alex Riley. Name is...
There we go. I think Alex Ryder's, like, that junior James Bond
that's
character.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Read a lot of those books growing up. I didn't know better then.
I had a year of, like, John Grisham and Jeffrey Archer, so I can't have a go. Okay. I will, but I can't.
Then a match which led to a lot of gossip and a lot of they're going. Another match which started off a moment. There's a lot of ripple effect from this Mania. The Iconics pinning, I don't know who they pinned. They beat Bayley and Sasha Banks, Nia Jax and Tamina, and Beth Phoenix by Natalya for the Women's Tag Team Championship.
Beth Phoenix by Natalya? Is that a new fragrance?
Do you know what? Yeah. then Kofi Mania.
Yeah,
that's this year as well.
This
Mania.
And again, I think that's kind of like, and I was saying this with Sakiza, maybe this, like, if following this is kind of like The Rock and Hulk Hogan then somewhat undermining the crowd or exhausting the crowd for the, and maybe that is truly the best moment from
the
event
itself. Six more matches after this.
Yeah, that doesn't help things either.
We now actually have the shortest match on the card, not Lesnar's. Samoa Joe choking out Rey Mysterio in 58 seconds for the US Championship.
Was this like an injury thing, I assume?
I assume so, or it was just trying to make Joe... I think it was trying to warm Joe up as well. Roman Reigns' return match from leukemia pins Drew McIntyre.
We were in this world of like... Where does Roman go from here? Because he's no longer hated, but he's not loved through natural organic reasons. And then it just became just a precursor to what would become the run of the decade, I guess. And we're still not finished yet.
No, nowhere near. Afterwards, we have the Triple H length match, because Triple H beats Batista in a no-holds-barred match. Relatively good.
Last match we will ever get from Dave Batista, probably. Although it was Triple H that had the retirement stipulation. And did Triple H ever actually wrestle another match after this?
No, heart.
Yeah, when was the heart attack?
It was after this, because he put his boots in the ring at the one where the fans returned.
I see. Because, yeah, there was the pandemic and he never wrestled during that time.
No. I can't remember exactly when in that timeline, but it's in there.
Mm.
Speaking of last ever matches, Baron Corbin pins Kurt Angle.
No John Cena. Instead, he just came out at one point and did his Thugonomics thing.
Yeah, he had his concert with Elias, I think.
He interrupted
Elias' segment.
So this was a 16-match, one-long segment. WrestleMania as well. And it was hosted by Alexa Bliss, so she must have done stuff too.
We have Finn Balor pinning Bobby Lashley for the IC title. Then we have a quick segment where R-Truth and Carmella do a quick dance break before the main event. I feel that's because the helicopter wasn't in range yet or something wasn't right.
But I'm assuming Charlotte wasn't actually in that helicopter at that moment. I'm assuming they filmed that all in advance and she was just in gorilla by then. And they were just playing the video.
I could see them having a helicopter land. Not necessarily in that specific one. And also, she's not wearing a headset. Yeah. Her ears must be shot.
They needed a helicopter for the shot where they're like, they shoot the helicopter outside the stadium to imply that that's what's happened.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. But it's like, I hate to break it to you, Simon, but the Queen and James Bond weren't actually in that helicopter.
Shut your mouth. Your traitorous, treasonous mouth.
It was also being piloted by Paddington. They didn't show.
And of course, the last match is this match. And that was a very long card. Reading that.
I was knackered listening to you, even more than usual. So anyway, that has been a two-part epic about the most important 3¼-star match of all time, maybe.
Again, it's cultural impact, not what happened in it.
Yeah. But Simon, if people want to get in touch with you with more inventive ways of coming up with a reason for having 3 at the end of your email, other than the very obvious reason you're going to have for this one, how can they do so?
You're such an arsehole. Right, people can get in touch with me on Twitter where I'm Sona the Simon Cross 3. 3 for the number of letters in the acronym for Air Traffic Control.
My name's Lorcan Mullen. That's LorcanMullen for the A at the third letter of glass, N for the N at the second from last letter of ceiling. That's my Twitter handle, Instagram, Facebook, Letterboxd. If you're putting at gmail.com at the end of it, that's my email address. Get in touch with the show at lmtyspod@gmail.com. lmtyspod is also our Twitter and Facebook handles. For the next and final episode of March Mania, we will be talking about a match from just the year before. It's WrestleMania 39. It's Rey Mysterio, it's his son Dominic Mysterio, it's a father-son WrestleMania match that we won't have to feel great shame in enjoying from now on. But until then, there's nothing left to say at this point, except that my name is Mr. Lorcan Mullen.
And my name is Mr. Simon Cross.
Thank you for letting us talk about something we really have no business talking that much about. And thank you, Sakiza, for being around and actually being someone that has merit in talking about this match. And I hope you stay with us as we reach the final end of our March Mania.